passes through the grave. It happens every day. It turns darkness to color, but I can lose my way. I close my eyes and stay inside, trying to discover something in the shadow that will open me to see. I turn the key, a deeper secret is calling me. Arms folded in the night, are they yours or are they mine? They reach, trying to uncover our eyes, search for a sign. Yours look into mine, trying hard to discover something in the shadow of the love we long to feel, soft but real. But a deeper secret is just beyond, yet closer still. The shadow slowly breaking, the sleeping child is waking. Shadow is the song we long to hear, soft but clear. The deepest secret is right
here. I sound better than ever. Al, we welcome back
to Profiles in Folk, Mark Lemaire, and Twilight being Cindy Von Empel. And our congratulations are in order. That song is called The Deepest Secret, but your secret is open now. You guys have gotten married.
It was a secret wedding, yeah.
Just
well, the preparations were secret, but then it was quickly announced.
All right. Just last Friday, so, which would be a week ago as of this airing. So, again, our congratulations to you both. Sort of knew that might happen when you were with us last summer, but, you know.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say.
You never know. Ah, well, it is good to have you back here again. You're doing another Northeast tour. You're from the San Francisco Bay Area, and our listeners are in for a treat if they haven't heard you the previous two summers that you've stopped here at Profiles in Folk, because it, as they can tell from that opening number, some very gorgeous harmonies, some exquisite guitar playing, and some sophisticated song arrangements as well from the two of you. And I was going to start, although the wedding news took me by complete surprise, being a deep secret. You want to talk a little bit about it?
About the wedding?
Yeah. How you pulled it off.
Well,
yeah, it was just transcontinental.
Duct tape.
Well, my family has a summer place up on Lake Champlain near Burlington, Vermont. And the family all gathers there for a week out of every summer. So we decided that we would get married in Vermont, even though we both live in California. So the trick was to make sure that somehow Cindy's parents, who live near Sacramento, got
right.
spirited out to Burlington. So we had to let them in on the secret.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than that, we managed to get my mother out. We took her out to lunch. And it's her birthday next month, but it was a birthday lunch for her. We told her we were taking her out to lunch. And once we got her in the car, we told her we were getting married and we were actually going into Burlington to have lunch with Cindy's mom and dad. And then we had an appointment with the Justice of the Peace at an hour after lunch. And then we went back to our family camp with this huge wedding cake that was meant to really impress them.
It was quite large. It was very, very heavy.
And once they saw the cake, they believed us when we said that we'd gotten married just an hour before.
There was stunned surprise.
That's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story.
It was fun pulling it off.
Yeah.
I'm sort of a hard on his sleeve kind of guy. I like to say, but I'm sort of an open book, as Cindy will tell you. So it was really fun to lie.
Oh, well, congratulations again.
Thank you.
So, now, where I was going to start the program before I heard that great news was that when you were here last summer, Profiles in Folk, you were in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign that included a video of you in your underwear, as I recall.
Well, it was illustrating
the underwear.
I don't generally appear in my underwear.
You were raising money for an album which came about called Home Isn't Home, with some beautiful artwork and a lot of wonderful music in it. So
you're very sweet.
And you're now touring and kind of pumping that. I looked at your webpage. You've got not only a Northeastern tour, but you'll be going to the Southwest. And
We're going to be playing in Texas.
Far field, yeah.
And Cindy's flying out, but I'm driving out since we'll need a car. And I'm going to be doing some gigs on the way home in New Mexico. Four Corners area, Farmington.
Right.
And in Albuquerque as well.
In Albuquerque, right. That's true.
So are you happy with the album?
Again,
yeah. It's Home Isn't Home.
Oh, yeah. Cindy, are you happy with it? Say yes.
I am. I was really pleased with the way the mixes turned out and some of the additional instrumentation. I think really enhances the pieces in a way that I certainly enjoy, and I think other people enjoy as well.
You know, the concept was to keep it to the same instrumentation that you're hearing here, just one guitar and two voices, and we added bass to a lot of the songs, but we tried to keep it subtle.
Right.
And we added some drums and percussion to a few of the songs. It was a little less subtle, but we felt like what we wanted to do was so that our live performances, which is just one guitar and two voices, when people buy the album, they wouldn't take it home and say, oh my gosh, what is this? This is a totally different kind of music than what I just heard. But we had to add a little bit of drums and bass to make it sound like a legit professional album.
It's a great philosophy, the one guitar, two voices. I love that.
It worked for Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, it works for a lot of performers, but I know exactly what you're talking about. That having been one of those guys that sells the performer's product, at concerts and things, and people buy it. You know, a CD based on what they're hearing on stage, and then they get it home and say, wait a minute, this is a totally different type of music they're doing, and it's not what I wanted. Because people do, they hear you on stage, and there's certain pieces that catch their ear, catch their fancy, and they're looking for that. They come back, to the sales table and say, well, do you have the album with such and such on it?
That's right.
Or whatever. So.
That's right. So we tried to make it close. All of the songs, there's one song that I'm hoping that we can play later in the hour that has extra production because it just sounded so good with it.
You're right.
But we'll get to that later.
Was this, Cindy, the first album that you've ever made?
Yes, it is, actually.
What was the experience like?
Daunting.
I mean, being married now to a sound engineer, recording engineer.
Well, Mark,
that probably made it easier.
It did make it easier, and he's an exacting ear. The goal was to try to do everything in one take, if possible, and with both voices and the guitar simultaneously to give as much of a live sound as possible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, inevitably, there's something that isn't quite right, and, you know, we'd redo it and come up with something. But I was very pleased when Mark had not just recorded us, but then put it all together to make a set piece. I know a lot of people don't buy albums these days. Well, albums, CDs, I guess the kids call them. And there. And, you know, it was sort of tricky trying to get 14 songs. We had, I think, 18 or 19 that were candidates for the CD. Mm-hmm. But getting them to fit together in a way that we thought worked as a piece, you listen to it from the beginning to the end.
Right.
And it works nicely from piece to piece, as well as pulling one off and just listening to your favorite two or five or whatever individually. It was quite a lot of work, but I think the end result is very satisfying.
Yeah, came out very nice, and it's nicely packaged as well. You guys did a very, very good job with it. Do you want to play a piece that can be found on the album?
Oh, sure, definitely.
We'll let people know again that our guests tonight here on Profiles in Folk are Mark LaMare and Twilight. Twilight being Cindy Van Empel. And they are from the San Francisco Bay Area, and they are in the midst of a Northeast tour that will include a sold-out concert tomorrow evening, Saturday evening, in Bethany, house concert. The album is called Home Isn't Home.
So let's do the second song from the album. It's called Zanzibar Sands. Mm-hmm. And this song, there's a bit of a story behind it. The narrator of it's a little bit about how kids, you can't predict what kids are going to grow up to be as adults.
That's for sure.
They're often pretty funny looking kids with their ears sticking out, and, you know, and then they grow up and they're the president of the United States or something.
All right.
So the narrator of the song comes across a big coffee table book in a bookstore. He's just browsing, and it's one of these big things that have photographs, and it's all about Africa. And the author of the book has walked across Africa by himself, and is a photographer. I made all this up. Mm-hmm. It's a lie, but it's a lie that tells the truth.
It's a nice lie.
Anyway, yeah. It turns out that the author of the book is this geeky kid that the narrator used to sit next to in, like, junior high school. And nobody could believe he would become an Indiana Jones type of person.
Right.
And the narrator's, you know, hasn't done any traveling, or not much. So this is Zanzibar Sands. I'm reading this book. The author's name is the same as this kid I knew in 1968. Alex used to live just a couple blocks away. I never knew him well, but I can see him now. He was honest, he was a funny kid, that had he'd always wear, kept mostly to himself, he didn't seem to care. One night I saw him on the road, headed nowhere. I offered him a ride, but he kept walking. Now that same strange boy, with his hat in his hand, walks across Africa to the Zanzibar sands. And I'll read his books of distant lands. It's funny how a funny kid becomes a remarkable man. Now I stayed right here and raised a family. I never traveled far, but at night I dream of far-flung places I've never seen. I get up on that road and I keep walking. Sometimes I wonder where I am. in this Massachusetts town. If I'd stayed in motion, what if I'd planned to walk across Africa to the Zanzibar sands? So I kiss my wife and start my day. I drop the kids at school and I'm on my way. A remarkable life can be led this way. I've got my road and I keep walking. And I'll read to my kids of distant lands and children who grow to remarkable men. Some live right here, but some lay plans to walk across Africa to Zanzibar.
Such a beautiful, beautiful song.
Well, we're glad you like it. We're glad to be here.
And it can be found on the new album from Mark LaMare and Twilight called Home Isn't Home. And people can get it from CD Baby or they off your webpage.
They can go to marklemare.com and they can hear bits from it. There's a link to CD Baby. And if you really want to support the arts, you can send me a check because CD Baby takes half the money.
And that's right.
Us that's performers, right. Let's face it, you know, that would like get us a latte at Starbucks.
There's been discussion of this on the folk DJ listserv.
Awesome.
I guess that CD Baby's actually taking a bigger cut now. Maybe it's the Folk Alliance listserv. It's mostly performers going back and forth about, you know, where can I best put my wares if for digital downloads and things. Right. And there's been complaints lately about CD Baby.
CD Baby has raised their cut, although it's still better than Amazon.
Right.
They take a huge chunk. You know, I got an email the other day from a guy who has had a cassette of Lake of the Cohiris, which is the song that we'll be playing later. We'll play the album version of it. And he has had this cassette since he was in elementary school, because I recorded it in 1985.
Right.
And he wrote to me and he said, where can I get, not only I want a copy of the new album, but I want the original one. He said, can you get me the one that was on the cassette? And I have it. We had it in a file. Sent it to him. And he asked me where he could get the CD, and we answered the same way. You can actually send me the money, and I'll get to keep it, which everybody loves to keep money.
Exactly, right.
And the other thing, and the reason I've told that story, is just because I so love the personal connection. I had no idea that this guy even existed. His parents went to this concert, and he was in elementary school. I don't know if he was there. But he lived on this cassette. He just listened to it all the time. And here he is 25 years later. He's a grown man. And he says, you know, he finds me. And if there's anything I like better than getting to keep all $15, it's somebody who writes and says, I love this song. And I think about it, and I use it, and I listen to it. And I didn't have any idea this guy was enjoying our music. There's no better gift for a musician. No.
Right. And, well, I'll tell you, even for a radio programmer, I have a somewhat similar story. But I get an album one day in the mail from a fellow who plays Aeolian pipes, Irish pipes. And he says, I'd like to send you the album. I've sent you the album because when I was a young kid growing up in one of the suburban towns here near the station, he said, I always listened to the show. My parents always had it on in the car radio when I was going to piping lessons.
There you go.
And he said, well, here I am. I'm in my 20s now. It shows you how long I've been doing the show. And I've recorded an album with these guys up in the Boston area. So it was just so much fun to play that album.
Yeah, it makes me want to remind your listeners that Profiles in Folk has been in continuous production for how long?
40 years.
And all with the same well-established and experienced host.
Yes, yes.
That's the man you're listening to now.
You're very kind and generous with your comments. That's for sure.
Well, I think that sticking with what you love doing throughout your whole life is probably something that's one of the hardest things to do, because often what we love doing is not what pays best, or what you don't get often these accolades like the guy who called and told you about the pipes that he's playing.
Right.
We often, as artists, operate in a relative vacuum. We don't know who's listening.
Yeah,
I mean, this is different for some big rock stars.
It's true.
It's obvious they're well loved, but for most of us who are more the 99% of the music world, a compliment or a call from somebody is like gold.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. You know, next time you guys come back, we've got to do a live show. You know, we're doing the show here live rather than taping it ahead of time, because Paul Litvinovich, who is our chief engineer and is engineering tonight's program as well from behind the glass, has got some new equipment where we can actually take listeners' calls and put them right into the studio.
Wouldn't that be a pleasure?
Which is, and we did it recently with a small band, a guitarist, and also a vocalist who was in the studio. And it was fascinating where the calls came from, including one call from Chicago.
No kidding.
Somebody who was listening in on the internet in Chicago. And they were all very complimentary, but they could ask questions of the performers as well, live. And we had a 7-second delay, but just in case. But it worked very well. So next time you're back,
it would be a pleasure. We love coming back.
Have to
back
do a live
here.
Show. Well, it's
turning
it's
into
wonderful
a tradition.
Having you. I mean, it is. It is becoming a tradition. But just wonderful guitar playing and beautiful. As I said at the beginning, gorgeous harmonies, and it is so good that you've got this first album out. Now, I asked Cindy about the making of the album. I'm gonna ask you as well. Were you extra picky because your profession is as a recording engineer?
Oh yeah. Well, of course I was.
Give you more angst than it normally would?
Well, I've spent a lot of time at it. I tried not to get angsty.
She's shaking her head.
Cindy is nodding yes that I was angsty. When you're making an album, when I'm making an album, I live the thing. I don't just record it and say, that's fine, whatever. We would record each song playing live and singing, and then I would go over the 3 or 4 or 5 versions that we did with a fine-tooth comb, and I'd select the best introduction from my 5 or 6 choices. And then the first few lines, the fact that we were performing together meant that I could get that live feel, even if we wound up editing it. And I'll point out that I'm a recording engineer who records mostly classical music.
Right.
And in classical music land, there's no layering. Everybody's playing at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And if somebody makes a mistake, the whole orchestra has to back up and do that little area again. And that was the same kind of aesthetic we did with this album. For the most part, everything was done live. Certainly the vocals and guitar were mostly done live. And if one of us made a mistake, we mostly had to go back and choose a section where all three of us, be the guitar and Cindy, the three of us,
did okay. The guitar has its own voice.
Yes, it
does. And if during the songs where there was a drummer, he was in the next room. He was behind mm-hmm. glass.
Right.
But he was playing along too. And so the intention was always to somehow keep the live feeling and keep it from that layer cake effect where Cindy sings her vocal weeks after I sang my vocal. Mm-hmm. There's something that happens when musicians are all together.
Yeah.
It's messy. It's harder to control. But it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
What we're winding up with, if I can be so critical, a lot of pop music is, it was never done that way. And you wind up with something that's mistake-free.
Mm-hmm.
But it lacks the kiss of life that I think
yeah.
acoustic
yeah, certain humanity.
Music listeners.
Right, right.
And if acoustic music is nothing, if it's not about humanity.
Mm-hmm. And it's true, even when I've got like a band here in the studio, they seem to enjoy that so much more, you know, playing together live rather than playing, you know, in a studio or whatever, because they can just sort of trade things and be a lot more relaxed. And it's amazing sometimes what comes out. Mm-hmm. Of them, and they're even like astounded, you know, like, you know how to do that? One player will say to the next and such. So, but, you know, having said that, why don't we go to the album and play a piece that's on it with a little more production than your one guitar, two voices. And it's a song that you've played before, you and Cindy have done before when you've been here. That's got a wonderful.
Did we do Lake of the
Kahiris? Yeah, yes, right.
But this is the album track.
Yeah, this is the album track, but it's got a wonderful story behind it. And I mean, we argued long and hard last year's program, when you were here in the summer of 2012, to try and interest Ron Howard in making a movie out of this particular book.
That he was making a movie. Our interest was to get him to use this song.
Ron Howard, if
well,
you're out
the
there.
Song, right? Okay. But the movie is being made.
I was in filming early in the spring, January.
Okay.
It may be my guess, and Ron, if you're listening, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that it's being edited now and probably prepared for release during the holidays.
Okay.
That's my
so
wild guess.
So he is behind it, though.
I believe the director is...
Akiva Goldsmith.
Akiva, or is it Akiva?
Goldsman.
Goldsman.
Mm-hmm. Akiva Goldsman.
Yes.
Or Akiva. Excuse me, sorry, if we pronounce your name wrong. I know you're listening. And this song is going to get you so hot to include on the ending of the album, the ending of the movie. I wrote this song back in the 80s when Winter's Tale...
This movie is made around a novel
called Winter's Tale by Mark Halperin. And Mark actually spoke with me on the phone a year ago about this, and he told me that the movie was being made by Akiva Goldsman because as a young man, Akiva was assigned to read this in his high school class. He was in Brooklyn
mm-hmm.
in high school, and he loved the book so much that he, little... high school kid that he was, swore that he would make a movie of it. Mm-hmm. And here we are some 25 or 30 years later, and it's happening.
That's pretty fascinating.
And it's sort of like Zanzibar Sands. He's a grown-up now.
Mm-hmm.
He's got power. He's making a movie with all these stars whose names escape me right now.
I think Russell Crowe is
Russell
going Crow to be
is,
in it.
Is the
yeah.
villain.
And Colin right. Farrell.
Colin
That's
Farrell is the
is
good
Colin
guy.
Farrell.
And William Hurt plays the father figure,
That's right.
William Penn,
Good.
I think his name is, and Harry Penn.
Harry Penn.
Yes. And it's a great, and I wrote this song and recorded it back in the early 80s and sent a copy on cassette to Mark Halperin. And he wrote back, this was all on paper because we didn't have the internet, and he said, that's a really nice song, and if it's ever made into a movie, I promise I'll think about it. And... fast forwarded it 25 years and we recorded the version you're about to hear. And I sent it again to Mark Halperin on email as an attachment because this is modern times. Yeah. And he phoned me that night and I had the honor of discussing the story of how Akiva Goldsman found the song, or found the
book.
Found the book. And this on Profiles in Folk is how he will find the song.
Yes, right. Please.
Okay. From the album, that is the Lake of the Cohiries, and from the album by Mark LaMare and Cindy Van Empel called Home Isn't Home. And you got to tell me, just to, before I hit you about songwriting, just a little bit about, yeah, because I'm looking at the album cover, obviously, but the artwork is just wonderful. These are actual photographs.
Those are photographs made by a man named Orvar Borgeson, if I believe. They were taken in Iceland.
Iceland.
He's an award-winning Icelandic photographer.
Wow.
And his website is listed there on the album. There are very the cover of the album has a picture of a house under the aurora borealis.
Mm.
And it's an old decrepit, I think it's a shed of some sort. Yes. We just thought it described the home isn't home concept. If you go to his website, on the other hand, very few of the photographs have a house on them or anything like that. It's a...
It's landscape primarily.
It's like National Geographic style landscape at large.
Right.
Just beautiful, incredible nature photography of the ice and the Arctic areas and the aurora. Incredible. Mm. And we were very proud to include his artwork on the album.
It's a very good choice for the cover. And is there a link from your website?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there is. You can click on that if you go to marklemaire.com.
Okay. And Mark Lemaire, again, is MarkLemaire.com. MarkLemaire.com. And you can find all the information you need about the albums. Mark has got two solo albums as well, called Rubato and Practicing Makes Perfect.
Rubato is just guitar solos. It's an instrumental album. It's actually one of the favorites. I guess some people like it even better than hearing us sing, which I find unbelievable. But No, I like Rubato as well. It's really one of my favorite things, too. The guitar solo is perfect music for background. When they're singing, I can't stop, but I have to listen to it as a vocalist. So instrumental albums have their place, too.
All right. Right. But you can find all that and some wonderful photos. I think even when you guys were in Europe, as I recall, there's some photos on the webpage.
There could be.
Of that. You did some busking when you were there. That was, what, several years ago?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And information, background information and such is there, too. But you can also order the albums. And, again, it's marklemaire.com. And these are our guests, Mark Lemaire and Cindy Van Empel, known as Mark Lemaire and Twilight. It's good to have you guys back. Now I want to ask you about songwriting because the Lake of the Cohiris, just a marvelous piece. And
thank you.
You know, you've done it on the show before, and now we've played the piece from the CD. But what goes into songwriting for you? Because you've just written some beautiful, beautiful songs.
You're very kind to even say that. What I was thinking was that we have a song that we'd like to sing that's sort of a premiere that illustrates what goes into songwriting.
Okay, that'd be good.
This song is called Lover's Guarantee, and it hasn't been recorded yet. I originally got this idea for this song and wrote an outline of it back at Christmas time of last year, and it went through approximately 30 or so separate versions of the lyrics over a period of several months.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, it got it to the point. I ran it through with several different songwriter friends that I know, and they offered suggestions. Cindy offered some lines, which turned out to be key lines.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept was originally to have a song that was about how there are no guarantees in love. But it was supposed to be a tongue-in-cheek sort of thing. A sort of a noir type of delivery.
Yeah, okay.
And the idea was there's this infatuation that usually begins a relationship or an affair. And at some point, the scales fall from these people's eyes and they're left not with their dream relationship, but usually with something quite realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was imagining this couple dancing, doing a slow dance, and both of them experienced enough to know that this was sort of the dream stage of the relationship and that soon it would shift.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept was difficult to get across. That's why I went through many different versions. Because at first I was singing it for people, and they were thinking this singer was saying that he wanted to hurt this person, like that he was a bad guy
right,
who was
going right.
to break her heart on purpose. But the real concept was that we always wind up challenging our partners. Just not on purpose, but because the nature of relationships brings up challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And so how to communicate that in about 12 lines.
Right? Not easy.
Should I sing it now?
Yeah, we can. Yes, let's do it now. Unless you want Cindy and I to sit here and talk about Elon Musk and maybe the Hyperloop. Loop, yeah. Cindy, I should point out, that's sort of an inside joke on the air, but she is a planner in the San Francisco Bay Area. So. And Elon Musk is this very, very wealthy guy who came up with an idea for this sort of hyperloop to go between, San Francisco and Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's sort of we like to think of it as a pneumatic tube.
Right.
Wow.
That people would get in, yeah.
No, thank you. It scares me a little.
Wow.
So we'll go back to the songwriting.
Yeah, well, we can discuss the Hyperloop, too, I guess. Lover's Guarantee. Your smile draws me under your spell. We fall into the dance that lovers know so well. You move me in rhythm, I bring you close. We float in a dream, but we both know the first steps are easy, but if we stick around, I will hurt you and you will let me down. But that all comes later. The first dance is always free. That's the lover's guarantee. Nobody wants to hurt the one that they love. But here's the secret, everybody does. With the best intentions, it happens inevitably. That's the lover's guarantee. Yay, we've both been here before. You danced with so many, why not one more? Take that broken heart and tell it to believe. Love's not easy, it's guaranteed. Infatuation is like champagne. Sip that bottle and feel no pain. But tomorrow your brain's gonna feel like concrete. Love's not easy, it's guaranteed. If seduction and danger are the themes tonight, look in my eyes and let's do this thing right. Step by step, degree by degree. You know and I know what we both need. If your dance is your word, right? write your name next to me, 'cause I just signed the lover's guarantee.
Nice indeed. That's a bit of a different style almost for you.
Well, I think you're right. You know, a lot of the shows that we do, we try to present a variety of different styles. And yet it's all Marc Lemaire and Twilight music. And I realize that the bluesy sort of style is, I haven't been delving into it as much. The darker side of Twilight.
Right. So. It does have you know, almost a 1930s, 1940s type feel to it.
I could have gone.
Pieces
your
thing,
smile
nice.
Drives me under your spell. We fall into the dance that lovers know so well. That's sort of what I'm imagining
as
I'm
doing.
That's
what I love about doing live radio. Yes.
I could have gone. But why make a caricature of it? No. I might need to do that because I'm making you laugh. And as a performer, I just want attention. So if we can make you laugh, then okay.
Yeah, well, you have the variety for the, you know, the two of you have been performing together now for about, what, 4 or 5 years?
4 years.
Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to ask, are there like any, because I've seen some, especially guitarists, have a whole ritual before a show they go through.
You mean when you pray to the guitar gods?
Things like that. Yes, right. Do you two have like rituals when you're before a show?
Well, we're married. So that it's
secret. Every time.
I don't know where to take this now. Help me out, Steve. You're the professional.
Sorry. No, but are there little like eccentricities or whatever that you might have before the show? I mean, you probably do some finger exercises, things like that, I would imagine. But
we are nothing if not eccentric. To answer your question seriously,
yeah.
We try to be quiet. We tend to converse all the time, and our throats get worn out. We took the train down from Vermont this morning, and we were talk.
Nonstop.
And we met people on the train. It's so much fun to meet people on the train. Mm-hmm. We suggest trains instead of airplanes if you want
to
meet people
travel.
And visit. Mm-hmm. But at some point, we said we must stop. So we mm-hmm. basically tried to shut off the chatter and just... I read a book, you know, you got to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is to focus on doing what we do together. And that means going inside yourself a little bit instead of just running off talking about everything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take a minute and remember why we're here and what's important mm-hmm. about what we're about mm-hmm. to do and focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't have any finger exercises. No. If we don't run through at least a few songs earlier in the day, we must do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because just to sort of break the ice.
Right, exactly.
But no, at this point, if we were performing a whole show instead of just interviewing, I would definitely want to warm up with maybe 20 minutes worth of songs.
Mm-hmm.
We'd run through all the parts that we tend to trip up and make sure we covered them again.
Mm-hmm. Right. How long when say you're doing a house concert, how long does it take before you feel like you're really into it once you've started performing in front of the audience? Is it sometimes immediate or...
You know, I think it depends because oftentimes when we get there, you know how a house concert is. You've got the stage and people just come in, they start sitting down.
Right.
And as long as we've got pretty much everything's set up, we'll often start chatting with people who are coming in, and oftentimes it just sort of flows directly from talking to people into, you know, well, let's get up and sing a little now. And I find that, that really helps us get into it right away, because mm-hmm. we can talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing, and and it helps, as Mark was saying, it sort of gets you in the mood of presenting the stories that you're going to be telling people that night. I really like it. Yeah, it's a good way to warm up.
That's the neat thing about house concerts, too, because they really are so intimate, and it's that person-to-person contact. You know, you just, you know, you get to meet some of the people beforehand, but you also, you know, got all those people in the room that are so close to you. Mm-hmm. So my guess is it probably does make performing easier.
I think it makes performing more real. Mm-hmm. Oz concert audiences usually listen really well, and they really appreciate that they're in the room with the musician, as opposed to, I don't know, buying a ticket and sitting in down, and the person comes out from behind a curtain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's also different from going into a pub where you're there to have a beer and there's some people
and
playing music.
And
the setting is so important, context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
If people, there's a famous story that you may have heard about the incredible and very famous and wealthy Joshua Bell, who's a classical violinist, who incognito one day went down to the subway.
Right.
You know that story.
In D.C.,
right. For all of you who are wondering, he did not attract a big crowd. Very few people even stopped to listen to him.
Right.
And this is a man who had the night before had been playing for $100 a ticket and I think filling Carnegie Hall.
Right. I think he pulled in $35 in the hat.
Yeah, it was so just incredible.
Grief, yeah.
So the point is that often people are, you have some very talented musicians that you only need to put in the right setting.
Yeah, right.
Like a jewel in the right setting, and suddenly it shines. And if they're not in the right setting, then you have no idea how shiny that jewel might be.
So
house concerts are a great place to really soak up some talent that deserves more attention than just overhearing them at the bar.
Right. No, especially for someone who writes wonderful songs like you do.
Oh, but there's so many.
You know, you want a listening audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I so want a listening audience.
Well, I think there's also something to be said about folk music in particular, because it really is about music that just folks write.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the instrumentation and all of that, it's really about speaking to people more directly.
Right.
Which I think is harder to do if you're, you know, playing in a 15,000-seat auditorium. Mm-hmm. Not that we've ever done that.
I'd like to try it.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't turn it down if someone were to offer such a thing. But you know, the house concert, folk music to me is a lot about community, and house concerts are about community. And so it's, I think it's a really good match with the style of music.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's intimate music. We sing about love or relationships or children growing up into grown-ups, and you know, it's not stadium music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were playing in front of that many people, we would probably need a lot of backup dancers who would seem odd on some of these songs. But you know, you got to keep the people occupied.
Yeah. Even at smaller like folk festivals these days, it's maddening to me. Maybe I'm just getting old, but you know, we're 20 years ago, people really did listen, even in an outdoor setting and, you know, a fairly large crowd. These days, people are looking at their cell phone, you know, their smartphones, or they're texting somebody or whatever. And sometimes it has a benefit, but many times, you know, it's distracting them. And I think that's part of the problem in society today, which is, you know, why there's such an upsurge in house concerts. You know, my feeling is, you know, that people do want that closer connection, those who are really interested in the music.
Right. It's a backlash, really, I think, against that sort of industrialization and impersonalization of society that we're seeing today.
There were some artists that I know, and I have no complaint about anybody who's trying to get their music out to more people, but there was a movement, which I hope will not take off, where you're performing on the internet, and people know that they can go to a live feed of your concert and quote-unquote be there with you as you perform. Now, I know some people that have had fun with this because people phone in, like you say, on radio. They phone in or they text you or something while you're performing. But I really think that a live performance is the same as live performance of musicians. Yeah. You have to be in the same room. You have to be able to smell each other. Wow. You know, you have to drink together.
Maybe not that.
But, you know, you get enough people in the room, especially if it's summertime. There's a human element that the internet takes away from us if we indulge it too much. Yeah. I don't need to go. I'm happy the internet is there so that I don't need to go shopping as much. Mm-hmm. I can order something on a website. I don't have to waste my time driving to the mall.
That's true.
But people, that's different. We need to be with people. And music, until 100 years ago, you had to go and hear musicians play and watch them. And they had to tune up and play imperfectly. Starting in the last 100 years, you could put on a Victrola or now an iPod, and that's how music is consumed. But that's not how music was meant to be consumed, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, it has been wonderful being in this room with you two and the guitar for this edition of Profiles in Folk. It's amazing how quickly an hour goes by with you two guys.
Did an hour go by? Oh, no.
Almost. We've got time. We actually have time for one more song. But, it's been wonderful having you back. And again, our guests have been Mark LeMaire and Cindy Van Empel. They are from the San Francisco Bay Area. They are known as Mark LeMaire and Twilight. Their new album is Home Isn't Home. And this is their third appearance with us here on Profiles in Folk
over
the last 3 years.
Truly our pleasure.
It has just been fun. Well, you always have such good insights on the music, so it's wonderful, and your music is so wonderful. It's great having you with us each summer. You've got to make a swing perhaps in the fall or the winter when our house concert series and things are in full swing.
Mm-hmm. You are so right.
Here in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be doing a house concert tomorrow evening. That's sold out already. There's an audience for you. So
that's
you'll
right.
You'll be up in Bethany.
We'll have to be personal with them.
And congratulations again on your marriage.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
We're very glad to be together. For the long run.
Oh, yeah.
One more song?
Yeah, one more piece.
Okay. Well, you know, here's one that we left off the album. I wrote it at the album was all complete, except for one. We wanted to include this one song, so we actually held up production of the album until we could learn it and record it.
You're right.
And this is called Dedication.
Okay.
You're asking about perfection. That's perfection in action. No, I've got this fabulous song and it has to be included.
I knew we'd be performing. I knew I'd be performing it a lot and we'd be sorry if we didn't put it on. This is about all the different people that have come and gone on the planet. Most of the ones that we remember well have been famous. Galileo or Euclid or Einstein or I don't know. But billions, I think 100 billion is the figure of people that have come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were just folks like you and me.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And so this song is for them. Butterflies in May, basking in the August sun that promised she would stay. All too soon, October's moon becomes December's snow. So simple and so clear, when a life is just a year. Let's dedicate this song to our friends who are gone. pass their stories onward to the younger and the stronger. Raise a toast to all the folks lost to memory, who made the world we love and the gifts we now receive. A child's shining morning face, by noon he finds a lover. They become your mom and dad, serving you your supper. Care for them as dust descends, and they become the child again. Give back all they gave, for life is just a day. Let's dedicate this song to our friends who are gone, and pass their stories onward to the younger and the stronger. Raise a toast to all the folks lost to memory, who made the world we love and the gifts we now receive. Remember all the folks lost to history, who made the world we love and the gifts we know.